Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Christina Namath, Travel Director of the Commonwealth Club. Our program tonight, Ethical Destinations, Vote With Your Wings, is about the economic power of the collective traveling community. Every year, Berkeley-based Ethical Traveler, a project of the Earth Island Institute, releases its often controversial list of the world's 10 best ethical destinations. Tonight, we'll learn which countries made the 2013 list and why. We're particularly pleased to have several distinguished representatives from the winning countries here with us, some who have traveled quite a distance. I extend a warm welcome to all of you and thank you for being here. I also welcome everyone else in our international community here and in the audience. Our guest speakers are Malia Everett, founder of Altru Vistas and the former director of Global Exchange Reality Tours, and Jeff Greenwald, executive director of Ethical Traveler. For 16 years, Malia Everett was the director of Global Exchange's Reality Tours program. She oversaw the growth and development of alternative travel programs, study seminars, and fact-finding human rights delegations to 40 destinations around the world. Malia has facilitated many tours that focus on international relations, human rights, political economy, sustainable development, women's issues, and the resilience of indigenous cultures. Malia is involved with many local environmental and human rights groups in the Bay Area. She serves on several advisory boards, including the Board for Ethical Traveler, Food First, Bay Area Green Tours, and Thrive Gulu. She works as a consultant for established and emerging tourism companies. Early this month, Malia launched Altru Vistas, a foundation that promotes transformational philanthropy in the travel industry through meso-financing programs, professional fellowship programs, and socially responsible and ecologically conscious customized tour programs. Jeff Greenwald is an award-winning journalist, photographer, and author. His journalism career began in 1979 when he reported on his experiences at a refugee camp during the Cambodian Civil War. Since that time, he has traveled throughout the world reporting on prison labor in China, female circumcision in Africa, human rights in Tibet, wildlife stewardship in Vietnam, and coral reef conservation from Belize to Palau. Greenwald is also hailed as an internet pioneer for creating the first international blog in 1994. His books include Shopping for Buddhas, The Size of the World, and most recently, Snake Lake, set in Nepal during the 1990 democracy revolution. Jeff is the executive director of Ethical Traveler, a nonprofit organization dedicated to exploring the ambassadorial potential of world travel. Please join me in welcoming Malia Everett and Jeff Greenwald.
Hi, can I use this mic? Is it working? I'm so grateful to see you all here this evening. I want to really thank, from the bottom of my heart, the Commonwealth Club for hosting us here for the second year in a row, putting us in the big room so we could accommodate all of you. It's just fabulous to see you all here for this event. I'd also like to really give a special thank you to the wonderful Christina Namath, who has sort of been the visionary behind making this happen at all, and just the energy of the event is really as much to do with her as it has been with us. And needless to say, a tremendous welcome to our dignitaries, our ambassadors, consuls general, and honorary consuls who have come here from as far away as Washington to be here at this event this evening. It's really a great honor to see all of you here. When we created Ethical Traveler in 2003, our goal was basically simple, to create an organization where travelers, tourists, could use their amazing economic power to help change the world, to give the United Community of Travelers an international voice, to speak up in favor of human rights, social welfare, and the environment in countries that we love to visit and that are home to so many billions of people outside of our immediate circle. We do a lot of things at Ethical Traveler. We do monthly news. We have a photo gallery. We do campaigns on issues that are especially important. But one of the most important things we do increasingly is what you're here for tonight. We try to encourage travelers to vote with their wings, to get out in the world and to visit the countries, particularly in the developing world, that have recognized the importance of travel and tourism and have really stepped up their programs so that tourism and travel benefits the people in their country, so that they have a good eye on the environment, protecting it, and they support the human rights, not only of the people who come to visit them from Germany and Israel and the United States and Canada and China, but so that their own people also come first. And those are the countries we're honoring here this evening, and those are the countries we're hoping that all travelers will visit and support with their tourism dollars. Malia?
Yeah, thank you. Is it okay? Can you hear me? Wonderful. I also just wanted to say it's an incredible honor to be here with you all this evening. Thank you all for making it here, for coming out and buying those airplane tickets at the last minute. And Christina, on behalf of the Commonwealth Club, thank you for all the amazing work and the efforts that it takes for the staff. I also wanted to just start with another gratitude, and that's to the Ethical Traveler family, the incredible team of researchers and workers. It's a volunteer-based organization, and none of this work could happen without just an incredible commitment to the mission of our organization. I particularly just fell in love with Ethical Traveler and its mission in 2003. By that point, you know, I traveled to many, many countries around the world and just saw the incredible potential for those of us that are traveling out there and off the IE beaten path to really come together and to put our values first and foremost. When we talk about voting with our wings, we choose to really put our money behind our ethical choices. And those choices are increasingly important when we talk about ethical travel or sustainable travel, et cetera, et cetera. I wanted to chat just briefly about why ethical travel is really important and why it should be increasingly because of the growth of the tourism industry. And I'm not a big person to actually talk and read from papers and things like that, so please pardon me. I do have just a few statistics I want to share with you, so you just don't take it from me that tourism is big business and it means tremendous opportunities and sadly lost opportunities for many nations around the world. According to the World Tourism Organization of the United Nations, and their international tourism barometer, international tourist arrivals grew by over 4% in 2011 to 980 million. The expected growth for this year in 2012 is going to be a little bit slower, but it's right on track to reach a milestone of over 1 billion people. So when we think about that, we also have to think, well, what does it mean for economies around the world? Fundamentally, we're looking at the fact that international tourism receipts are exceeding $1 trillion for the first time in 2011. And this is up from the U.S. of $928 billion. So when we take a look at the travel industry globally, you know, we see that this is big, big business. And the opportunities for countries around the world to benefit from that, to benefit from those receipts and invest in their infrastructure and their people is tremendously high. And when we talk about ethical travel, we talk about thus two important facets. The first is the ethos, you know, how we travel as travelers. It's really important, the intention behind travel, the meaningful purpose behind travel. So many people are out there doing amazing educational trips like the, you know, Commonwealth Club does, for example, and others are doing geocultural trips and really, you know, getting closer to the people and the place. The industry itself is moving and transforming in many ways. But sadly, it's a lost opportunity as well. The truth of the matter is that income is not often residing in the local or the national economy. And so I know we talked earlier, I talked about leakage to the north or capital flight, but it's averaged that in between 60 to 75% and up to 80 to 90% in certain areas in the developing country and developing countries around the world, this money is leaving their economies because of foreign ownership of industry, of imported resources, of foreign tour operators and airlines, et cetera. So I just wanted to just frame that just for a moment when we talk about the incredible opportunities around the world. Because when we're welcoming and greeting the top 10 recipients from tonight, and as we continue to travel around the world into other areas, we have a tremendous opportunity to also think about how we spend our dollars in country and asking those right kinds of questions. So Jeff, should we get started?
Pretty much. So There's three criteria that we use. We use dozens of different indices and spreadsheets that are available to the public from many, many different organizations. But we basically break it down to three categories: social welfare, human rights, and environmental protection. So much work and so much research is done. We use this year, and I'd also like to join Malia in thanking our amazing staff of volunteers and researchers who spent 3 months. We worked it down to a list of 25 countries from the developing world, and then from there down to the 10. We are not going to go through every reason that the 10 countries made it onto the list. There's too many. But we're going to talk about some of the highlights for each of those countries. And I do want to also emphasize, as we try to emphasize carefully to the press, that there is no order. All 10 countries are on an equal plane. They're all the best. Okay? One of them that starts with a B and one of them that starts with a U are not ranked 1 to 10. Okay? So
it's alphabetical, Jeff?
It's alphabetical. Yes, we're going to begin with B. Unless I have to renumber my pages.
And then we're going to call out the country's name and also ask for just a round of applause after we just briefly go through just a few of our highlights.
Right, and what we're going to do is I'm going to talk about the highlights, one or two places that we're hoping that there'll be some work done, and then some of the reasons to visit this country. I'd like to start with Barbados. Barbados has done astonishing work in the environment. Working with the United Nations Environmental Program, they've created what's called the Comprehensive Barbados Green Economy Scoping Study. Guess. And the whole reason for this was to create a culture of environmental protection in Barbados as part of the country's whole social and economic fabric. This year, 2012, Barbados was praised by the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights for its excellent standing in literacy and education. And get this, Barbados has the second best ranking in the Americas, after Canada, in Transparency International's Corruption Perception Index. So it's a very transparent country. What goes on there is clear to the people who live there. Human rights are high. The environments are being protected. Barbados could do a little more work to improve on its human trafficking situation. It's a Tier 2 country, and they could put a little more effort into that and into promoting and protecting the rights of people of different sexual orientations. That's the only real criticisms we have for the purpose of this evening. Now, there's many reasons to visit Barbados and many reasons why it's a terrific ethical destination. Any of you are scuba divers or snorkelers, it's really an extraordinarily beautiful place. Barbados Blue is dedicated to the conservation and preservation of the marine ecosystem, restoring the reefs, educating the people about the reefs, and all the associated ecosystems with the reefs. Some of the best surfing in the Caribbean is in Barbados, and as many of you probably know, some of the best rum. And you can go to Barbados and tour some of the, I don't think they're called microbreweries, but the local batchcraft production places. So I would like to congratulate and to greet the Honorable Mr. Barry Levine, the Honorary Counsel from Barbados, who's here with us this evening. Will he stand up, Mr. Levine? Thank you. On behalf
of
Ethical Traveler. Thank you very much. Look forward to talking to you during the reception.
Thank you. It's my honor to click the next slide and also announce our second destination this evening, which is Cape Verde. Again, just so many different criteria, and I won't go through the whole list, but I think one of the most impressive points with this particular nation is the fact that they're working towards 100% and possibly 300% renewables in the near future in terms of energy. And this has also been woven into the tourism industry. They have a zero emissions concept for tourism in the works, according to government plans. And this is really exciting. It could be a model program for many of the nations around the world. They also have the highest standard of living in West Africa. And in terms of a lot of the issues that we look at, human rights issues and some of our concerns around other nation states in Africa, they have no laws that explicitly discriminate on sexual orientation or gender identity. In terms of some of the things that we are worried about and will be monitoring for future reports, we know that rising tourism could definitely pose a threat to Cape Verde's marine life and the incredible bounty that it has in terms of its marine ecology, especially with nesting sites for loggerhead turtles and humpback whales. Tourism remains primarily in the busy hubs and the more dense populated areas, and it's not reaching, the benefits aren't really reaching a lot of the rural or the, what we call the urban poor, who often could really use that boost. And why to go? Oh gosh, I mean, we look through these amazing images and all this long, long list of what they have to offer. But from black sand beaches and bleached white beaches and high cliffs and mountainous peaks and deserts, just the amount of ecological diversity is very high. And there's plenty of ecotourism opportunities there, from diving and walking and fishing and windsurfing, et cetera. Since tourism is also a recent arrival, we talk a lot of and worry about the commodification often of cultures, but so many of us are actually thinking and really, really want to have these authentic kind of cultural experiences, and that's definitely one of the highlights for traveling to Cape Verde. You can have samples of this incredible, rich culture. And so I'd like to congratulate and give a warm round of applause to Cape Verde and welcome the president of the West Cape Verde Association, Domingos Fernandez. He's here. Please stand, sir. Thank you.
Woo! I joked with the Honorable Sylvia Ugalde, the Consul General from Costa Rica, who flew up from L.A., that her shoes must be worn out from attending these kinds of events, because Costa Rica is such an extraordinary destination with so many accolades to its credit. And it's been on our list for many, many years, and we're so privileged to have the Consul General here this year. Ranked number one happiest country out of 151 countries by the Happy Planet Index. Thanks to the efforts of a local group in Costa Rica called Pratoma, working with Ethical Traveler, all shark finning was banned in Costa Rica this year.
Yes.
And the Costa Rican government stepped up and stopped a very controversial dam project that would have flooded the Taraba indigenous territory and threatened the local people. The dam was stopped, another victory for the local people and for the environment in Costa Rica. Now, there's a lot of wonderful things going on in Costa Rica, and there's also some issues. And this has been the occasional years that Costa Rica drops off our list. It's because it's well acknowledged that it is a very serious hub for sex trafficking. This is something that the Costa Rican government is working on. You come to the airport there and you see billboards and notices, but it's something that clearly needs some more attention. We'd like to wipe out sex trafficking on this planet during our lifetimes if we can, and that'll take heightened vigilance from all of these countries, even the winners on our list. In terms of what to do in Costa Rica, it seems like a lifetime is hardly enough, with the 20 national parks, 8 biological reserves, whole series of protected areas, cloud forests. It's just sea turtle nesting grounds. It's a fabulous place. I have never been to Costa Rica, and that is everyone's reaction when they hear that. I would like to congratulate and greet the Honorable Sylvia Ugalde, Consul General of Costa Rica, who's here this evening.
There we go. And to our fourth country, one of the most stable nations in the region, Ghana, makes our list this evening. It has had a wonderful record of late, changing power politically and doing so peacefully. And additionally, with a lot of the records that we've been looking at historically, we're very concerned with some of the civil rights and civil liberties issues in the area. And Ghana's done amazing work moving these issues forward. It has a high degree of media freedom, and the private press and broadcasters operate without any significant restrictions. One of the other real remarkable things I've noticed a lot in terms of some of the tourism events we've been to recently is just the inroads that they're making into environmental protection and conservation. And when I was at a recent festival, they were talking about how over 15% of Ghana's territory now is under some form of protection. So that's something that we definitely want to continue to applaud. In terms of some of the issues that we will be monitoring and looking towards in the future are human rights against abuse, human rights abuses against people in same-sex relationships, so homosexuals, and people with mental disabilities was also, there were a number of issues of concern there around suffering of abuses in psychiatric institutions and also with spiritual kind of healing centers. In terms of why to go to Ghana, it seems like there's just a huge list of amazing national parks to visit, including Kakum and Mole. They've also been a pioneer in the field of community-based ecotourism. So if you do want to go to Africa and really visit with a community that's deeply involved with the protection of their natural resources and honored as such, Ghana may be a good choice for you. There's a vast array of wildlife, including elephants and monkeys and marine. You know, you have your turtles and crocodiles and for any of the bird lovers, of course, a bounty of colorful birds and sanctuaries and monkey sanctuaries, et cetera. Ghana's representative could not be here tonight, but I just wanted to take a moment and applaud for any of those representatives in nation states. Congratulations to Ghana.
On November 18th, 2011, President Obama directly praised Latvia, saying, and I quote the president, though I unfortunately can't imitate him, "Today, Latvia is a flourishing democracy and an inspiration to countries around the world." Strong words from Mr. Obama. One thing that Malia and I were talking about earlier is that nearly all the inland waters in Latvia are pollution-free. Kind of an amazing thing to think that you could go to almost any lake and river in Latvia and drink the water or eat the fish or whatever. I still would have to have a Latvian try it first, but I'd be willing to give it a try. And the Environmental Protection Index, of course, a very reputable and important index. Latvia is the most improved country on that list, so they're going from strength to strength in terms of dealing with their environmental issues. There are a few issues with Latvia, nothing that's overwhelming. Latvia has been on our list for several years now. Non-citizens, including stateless people, historically suffer from limited access to rights. I hope that's being addressed. I don't really know what the very, very latest scene in that situation is, but I know that they're working on it because it's very important to them to be on this list year after year. It's a great place to visit, I've been told. There are 4 state reserves, 3 national parks, 22 nature parks, 211 nature reserves, 6 protected landscapes, and a partridge in a pear tree. And one thing that's really interesting and that I really would love to see, it sounds like a great story, is that the small harbors that were neglected or destroyed during the era of the Soviet occupation have been revived, and they now support a thriving fishing culture, which tourists can come and participate in. So you can go there and fish from those old Soviet docks. So I would like to congratulate Latvia once again for making this this list and to greet Ms. Liga Hoy, the honorary consul from Latvia, here to accept the award.
Wonderful. The next country on our list that we have the honor of highlighting this evening is Lithuania. One of the things that came so clear through the research was the fact that the culture in Lithuania really highlights, historic preservation and the preservation of these natural resources. There are many, many, many specific examples of local communities in different regions and cities that are working together to have basically an improve their environmental protection. For example, just to highlight one or two, there's a water protection measure in the Neman River Basin that was highlighted potentially as a model. And in the city of Kaunas, they recently entered in as a candidate for the European Green Capital 2015 on the basis of 12 really important indicators covering climate change and energy performance, with innovations in terms of sustainable local transportation and air quality, in addition to noise levels and green urban areas. Another important of this in terms of eco-innovation and sustainable employment is also that the environmental practices are under local authority, which is really important. In terms of a few of the issues that we'll be looking for and monitoring in the future, one is, again, as Jeff mentioned earlier, with Costa Rica, we have concerns around ongoing issues of human trafficking and the trafficking of people into the sex tourism industry, as well as some drug trafficking that was noted in the reports, as well as a concern that there was an increase of greenhouse and greenhouse emissions by 3% in this last calendar year from 2011 to 2012. And in terms of what to see, oh my goodness, it was pretty fun just thinking about, I want to go back there. Think of all the amazing World Heritage sites.
She's been everywhere.
Well, not yet. We still have a few places to go, especially now on this list. But I did have the honor of traveling through the region this summer. And, you know, in particular, the World Heritage sites, for example, the Vilnius Old Town, is supposed to have some of the most amazing archaeological and kind of outstanding diversity, and being one of the most best-preserved old towns in all of Central and Eastern Europe. So I'm looking forward to seeing that Gothic and Renaissance and Baroque masterpieces there. Because of also a low population density, it looks like agrotourism and visiting to forested areas and the countryside is a tremendous opportunity for ecotourists because of the pristine conditions of the area. You know, we were taking a look at things you could possibly do there, and they were extolling the abilities for you to fish in these beautiful places and also to go hunting.
And farming. You can be a farmer for a while.
But it's my honor today to welcome and to congratulate Lithuania and thank the Honorary Consul, the Honorable Mr. Dennis Garrison, for being here this evening. Please stand, sir. Is that it? Am I in the wrong country?
No, I'm. That's not it at all. We have a couple more.
Oh, there we go.
A few more, yeah, yeah.
Where are we? Oh, we are back there. Okay.
No. You're giving the whole thing away.
Whoops. I think we're missing a slide.
Okay, let's just leave it on this for a moment, and I'll just see. We might be missing a slide. Anyway, with an excellent human rights record and the eighth freest economy in the world, according to the Heritage Foundation Economic Freedom Index, one of Africa's highest per capita incomes, literacy and life expectancy continuing to go up every year, regular free elections, great health care. Who knew? Mauritius. In the past year alone, the government of Mauritius has put a tremendous emphasis on starting to green their economy and implementing a lot of sustainable development programs, improving energy efficiency, increasing the amount of energy from renewable sources, alleviating poverty, and creating social programs that put people to work in the green energy field, exactly what we're meant to be doing in this country. So that's really, really encouraging. We're really happy to include Mauritius on the list this year. Unfortunately, there is a prominent issue with domestic violence against women. We hope that Mauritius will look at that and take some steps to really alleviating that. And it also, like so many countries in Africa and Latin America and around the developing world, needs to have more work done in the field of gender equality. And there's also the highest rate of diabetes in the world, which is kind of a strange thing that I didn't really look into too so much. But and some security force abuses. Mauritius has some issues, but you know, African countries seem to have some issues, and Mauritius, Cape Verde, and Ghana are all really doing a tremendous job and really are standing out for the energy they're putting into improving their situation. And I'm really, really happy to see Mauritius on the list for the second time, I believe, since we started giving these awards out in 2006. Now, I don't know how many of you have a strong mental picture of Mauritius in your minds, but there are mountains. You can actually go mountain climbing there. There's loads of waterfalls. There's hiking, there's biking, there's kayaking, rivers and forests, and there's apparently great views in the southeastern region of the country. It's a place to discover, a place to explore, a place where you can vote with your wings and discover something you probably never even knew existed. So I would like to congratulate Mauritius and to welcome the Honorable Jitu Somaya, the Honorary Consul from Mauritius.
Wonderful. The next country that we have the honor of presenting a little bit of information to you tonight is Palau. This country is just really remarkable. I learned so much today in the last few weeks, was reviewing the materials on Palau in particular. I just want to thank them too for being such an amazing leader in the areas of conservation. The Green Energy Micronesia Initiative, it has done amazing things, especially for some of us that really love and appreciate sharks. It created the world's first shark sanctuary and is also a leader in the organization of tuna exporting countries. So it's really important when we look at fish stocks, and as so many of us look at our little seafood watch, you know, every time we're out buying fish so we can practice the best kind of personal sustainability eating patterns, knowing what Palau is doing to really manage those is very, very important. The country also has an excellent human rights record. And one of the other projects that I particularly wanted to highlight this evening to you all is the fact that their tourism funds, or let me back up, when you come into the country, they have an airport fee, and that fee is channeled to conservation projects in the tourism area. And so the fact that they're doing this kind of innovative tourism product development, I think, is really important and could be a great precedent for other environmental conservation projects around the world. It was really hard to pick out if we were talking about, like, well, what do we say that Palau needs to kind of watch out for and look out for? And I just think because of its incredible diversity, it looks like there's just a few in terms of potentially over-harvesting. We looked at sea cucumbers, for example.
The sea cucumbers might be in trouble in Palau.
Yeah.
Very serious issue.
So we don't need to minimize, you know, any species, even our favorite little cucumbers or sea anemones.
They're very sweet, really, when you die.
But it is an issue as we think about over-harvesting and our impacts, that, human impacts on ecology. So there was that, and there's also looks like they may be drilling for future economic stability of oil. And so the long-term implications of that are also of concern and something to watch out for. In terms of why to go, I am an avid marine girl myself and love to snorkel and surf and scuba. And after chatting with Jeff this morning, and he told me that in his 25 years of diving, that Palau was one of his top two or three.
It's a fantastic place underwater, scuba diving, snorkeling. It's unbelievably beautiful areas around these. Look at those islands. You can imagine what's in between them underwater, you know.
So the fact that UNESCO names the Rock Islands Southern Lagoon as one of the new wonders of the world in 2012 is very compelling for us. And another issue, just in terms of the integrity of and the ancientness of the ancient roots in a modern culture, the shell money and looking at the tribal economy and how it's an ancient but living part of the culture still today, I think many of us who are anthropologists and really interested in culture could appreciate. So it's my honor to congratulate Palau, to give them a warm round of applause, the ambassador, His Excellency, Mr. Hersey Kiota, and the honorary counsel, Mr. Andy Lika.
I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but I do have to tell one tiny story about Palau, which is in the beginning of that story I gave you. When I was there 10 years ago on assignment for Islands Magazine, there was a woman who arrived carrying a case full of test tubes, empty test tubes. And so my dive master asked her what they were for, and she said, "I've seen pictures of Palau, and the water is so many different colors, I want to take a test tube of each different color."
Uh-oh.
Okay. One of the first countries to sign the Kyoto Protocol, a country whose constitution prohibits discrimination based on race, gender, disability, language, or any social status, strong on environmental policies. Samoa supports a concept called Vatupia, hope I'm pronouncing that right, which signifies the sacred relationship among all things, including people and the environment. The government has been very vocal in its support of finding solutions to climate change and its impacts. And you'll notice, if you've been listening, that a lot of the countries on our list in the developing world are island nations. And that's a trend we see year after year, because who's got to care about climate change? Islands really do, and they often really step up to it and do tremendous, tremendous work. So Samoa is our penultimate ethical destination. There are some issues in Samoa, as there are through many parts of Polynesia. Domestic violence is a problem, and same-sex sexual acts are illegal, but there is no discrimination or actual prosecution that we've really turned up. So we kind of let it slide. Poor prison conditions, not like here. And some problems against people who are not Maatai, Maatai being the main tribal group there in Samoa. But other than that, Samoa, a model country, one of the most ethically run countries in the world. And there are many wonderful things you can do in Samoa, from the very simple kind of ecotourism where you simply stare on a beach and read that big pile of books you've been putting aside all year. And these lodges are run by locally owned and run by villages, and this enables them to achieve a standard of living that's quite high while still maintaining their cultural values and their subsistence farming. And then there are wonderful preserves, the Faialupo Rainforest Preserve in the north, the Tafua Peninsula Rainforest Preserve in the south. And there's some infrastructure. It's not like you're going to find in Costa Rica, but there is infrastructure. It's going to be a little wilder. It's a place to get a little wild as a traveler. If you've been to Thailand 5 times and you want to go play somewhere that's beautiful and tropical and really different culturally, Samoa may be a really good bet for you. So another good place to vote with your wings. There we go. It's so awful when I just, move things around just a little bit. I get so confused. I want to congratulate Samoa.
That's
and
why we're
greet
here.
Ms. Ida Tifi-Tifi Fuimaono. Fuimaono, is that correct? Thank you so much for coming. It's a pleasure to have you here. You look so lovely in that dress. You represent Samoa. Thank you. Is that necklace you're wearing? Are those Samoan shells? They are? Lovely. Thanks so much for coming all the way out here from New York to be here this evening.
And last, but certainly not least on our list, and we make it from B this year to you, this next country was the first nation to ratify the Domestic Workers Convention, showing their dedication to workers' rights. They've also guaranteed and granted that each primary and secondary school student has a laptop, showing their commitment to creativity and education. This country, Uruguay, has also pursued amazing agricultural policies that are both environmentally sustainable and also profitable for their farmers. So, when we look at Uruguay, many of us think, wow, we're always thinking about Peru and Brazil and Ecuador as some of our lists in South America. And we're honored to be able to recommend that you vote with your wings down south and try to get a few weeks in Uruguay. A few of the issues that we are concerned about continue to be, according to the U.S. State Department's 2012 report on narcotics and control, Uruguay has become a transit zone for some of those narco-trafficking activities. And because of that, we're also worried a little bit about the rise of some cocaine processing things and throughout the region as well. However, Uruguay's landscape is wonderful. I mean, for those of you who've had the opportunity to travel, amazing biodiversity from flatlands to, to grasslands and lots of amazing outdoor activities that you can do. For those of us who have family members that are ornithologists and love birds and have to bird watch, there's a lot of them out there. I know because I birthed one. It's also known to many rare and colorful and amazing species of birds from, you know, Rocha to Laguna de Castillos, close to the seashore and other places where you can really take in a lot of local wildlife. And there's also beautiful unspoiled beaches. And when we were doing some of the research, I'm like, okay, there's another surfing destination for me to go to on the Atlantic Ocean side. So Uruguay could not be here tonight, but we'd like to end with an applause to Uruguay and to all of the top 10 this evening. Thank you.
And before we get to the Q&A period, I just want to add again with our list. You say our list is controversial, and of course it is, because we get tons of letters and emails after we publish the list. How dare you pick such and such a country? You know, my brother was arrested by the police there for blah, blah, blah. It's true. No country is perfect. No country in the world is going to be perfect. We are looking towards countries that are aiming high, aiming for that mark, and doing their absolute best. So please remember, there will be issues with all these countries, but taken in context, or by and large in the developing world, these are places where your money is going to support best practices and to support a government that really cares about its people, and we think that's important.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, we have the first question. That you, to go ask questions, you generally go to the microphone. We'll perhaps make an exception for you since you're a dignitary. But we do have a.
I don't have a question, but on behalf of all of us who've received the awards, I have to say it's embarrassing that you know more about my country and the others than we do. But we do appreciate all of the work that you have done. It's an immense task. We know you're a volunteer. This is incredible. And so we just would like to thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Counsel.
Thank you.
Yeah, first I do want to thank the two of you and everybody behind you. It helps to make this possible. By highlighting activities, countries, and organizations like this, you bring attention. It's holotrope. You ever hear the term holotropism? I'm saying it wrong. What you shine light to, you get attention to. You want to shine a light to all the issues and everything, all the crap in the media, you're going to get that. Mm-hmm. Start shining light on this, you're going to get more of that. So thank you for you and all everybody behind you that's helping you with this.
Thank you.
My question is an invitation to any of the consuls or ambassadors. I would be curious, maybe not each of you, but whoever would like to speak, maybe 30 seconds or so.
You do that.
What are the inspirations and motivations for moving in such a sustainable ecological direction?
Could you repeat that one more time? So I didn't hear it that well.
Sure.
What are your inspirations and motivations?
For these countries that are winning this award and things like this, what are the inspirations and motivations for moving in an ecological and sustainable direction?
Would you like to pick two countries and we can have them represent? We promised these dignitaries they wouldn't have to speak. They just have to sit here and look very handsome.
Palau?
Palau? And Your Excellency, are you willing to say something about Palau? What inspired Palau to protect its environment? Did you get a shock?
Yeah.
You're electrical.
Yeah.
Thank you. We're inspired to protect our environment. We're a small island nation, very small, very fragile, that, you know, if we ourselves do not try to protect our environment, the next generation will not enjoy and see the Palau that we know. So we spearheaded the what you call the Micronesia Challenge to try to save 20% of offshore and 30% of terrestrial in the year 2020. Also, we also saw the and know that sharks have had a place in the ocean, and the abuse to shark made us declare Palau water as the first world shark sanctuary. So.
Maybe we'll give it to a land-based country now. There's a
okay.
Thank you.
Maybe Domingos has a couple of words.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Domingos Fernandez, and our country was discovered by the Portuguese over that more than 550 years. And we had very bad time. And one of our leader, and very intelligent, and think we should have our country back. But I think we are the smallest nation in the United Nations. But it doesn't matter what they said, you know, the good thing comes in a small package. So we are on our own now. Only thing we have there, the source, is fishing. And our ocean is very clean because we don't have a lot of traffic there, ship and stuff like that. So United States is helping us a lot. Most of the investment there is for foreign country. Italian, it was number one, making hotels and a restaurant. It's very new country. We took independence from Portugal in 1975. And we started, Amílcar Cabral, our leader, and it wanna start it in the 50s. A long story, if I go tell you a story, it take, you know, hours, but I try to make it short. So the thing, Salazar, Dr. Oliveira Salazar, was president in that time in the 40s and 60s. He ran our country for over 45 years. They make the laws in Portugal, the rules, they enforce it, they send to the island. We are there, whatever they say, we take it. But sometimes I'm an emotional person, I'm going to cry, but I'm not going to cry here. Amílcar Cabral, like Dr. King here in this country, what he did for our country. What he did. He did it because he didn't want the violence, because our country is very small, we can't fight, we have nothing to fight, we don't. So, but we get with the Guinea, America saying Guinea, Bissau, because two Guineas, Guinea-Conakry, French, is Guinea-Bissau, Portuguese. They divided. Okay. So now, we fought together. Cabo Verde fought mostly with pen, with politics, not fight physically. We took our independence. Now we're renting our own. And our president, ex-president, former president, you know, Pedro Pires, he got the word. I think you know about it. He's watching all the Africa's countries, small countries, how they run the country. We come number one last year. And our president, because he's one running the country, he had a second term. Our term is for 10 years. We have 5 years. We took independence in almost same time, you know, the American, same, on a month, because I was in July 5th and America is July 4th. So we celebrate in almost same time in the East Coast. We have a large population there. Like I said, I have a lot of a story, but I make it short here.
So, thank you.
Yeah. So very much. Our president, you know, warned that. So he's going to have, $200,000 yearly for his life, the good work he did. But thank you again. So,
thank you so much. Thank you.
Honorable Liga Hoy, the counsel from Latvia, is going to address the same question briefly.
Thank you. I don't want to speak for Lithuania as well, because I know they have a similar story, though, to Latvia, and I just want to keep it very short. Latvia's motivation in environmental protection is about reclaiming the country that was taken from them after World War II. And they actually reclaimed a country after 70 years of Soviet occupation, where, as Jeff mentioned, we have many, many rivers that we can swim in and fish in. But in 1989, in the 80s, in 1991, when the Soviet Union devolved and the Berlin Wall fell, we couldn't even swim in the Baltic Sea. We couldn't eat any fish. And a lot of the children were very, very sick and dying because the waters were so polluted. And so Latvia really, similar to Samoa, is very spiritually connected with their land. And so in order to reclaim the Baltic spirit and the Latvian spirit and really reclaim their cultural heritage, they knew they also had to clean up all of the rivers and the forests and reclaim the land and the country that was theirs prior to the Soviet occupation, which is a quest that they've taken very seriously. And so we're very honored to be represented here on this list of very, very fine countries. And so we want to thank every one of you and the Ethical Travel Organization for that recognition. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Mary Catherine O'Connor. I'm a reporter with Outside Magazine. And I wanted to ask you, it's a two-part question. The first, how many years have you been making this list, and have you seen direct improvements that you can maybe direct or indirect attribute to the list? And the second part is, in terms of, in terms of environmental improvements in the countries you write about. And the second part is, has ecotourism proven to be helpful in terms of protecting the environment in destinations? You know, is it moving the needle? Mm-hmm. Is there any evidence of that you've found?
The second question is easier to answer than the first. Well, it's easy to say how long we've been doing the list. We started doing it in 2006. I think we missed one or two years in there that we didn't do it, but now we've come back with a vengeance. It is very difficult to quantify the impact our list has on travelers. When you think about that, it's one of the challenges that makes it so difficult to find support for our organization in some ways, because we're not out there building schools or doing things that are you know, extremely quantifiable. We're more of a visionary organization. And we do hope that if people go to these countries because of our list, they'll talk to people about it there and let them know why they're there. It'll still be difficult to quantify, but as a volunteer organization, I guess we can afford to do things like that and, you know, just sort of hope for the best. We just really believe in what we're doing, and we really want travelers to change the world for the better, and this is one of the best ways we can think of to do it. So whether or not hard numbers are going to come back of, you know, 692 people went to, you know, Latvia or Samoa next year because of our list, I think that's unlikely. Mm-hmm. In terms of the impact of ecotourism and sustainable practices, do you want to answer that? I mean, it's easy to answer.
Do you want to do it?
A big yes. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, just sort of flippant ecotourism because it's a branding. It's a brand now as well as anything else. But one country that I'm very familiar with is Nepal, and I've seen, especially in the mountains, that the ecotourism programs have really stopped deforestation, helped for tree replanting, helped to make the rivers safer, dealt with solid waste problems much more effectively. And if not for those ecotourism programs and the fact that they needed to sustain their tourism business, God only knows what situation some of those places would be in like now. Mm-hmm. I think across the board from Uruguay to Palau to Samoa, you can probably point to ecotourism ventures, successful ones. The most important thing they do, as far as I'm concerned, and I think I can speak for Malia also, is that they put the money into the pockets of the local people. You don't have a Novotel or a Hilton getting profits from money on a Mexican beach. You have local people, you know, creating inns, creating restaurants, and enriching their lives through this cultural exchange, which is one of the best parts of being alive on this planet. And that's, you know.
Yeah, typically if I was to really answer your question, I would just ask you the definition, what you really mean by ecotourism. I mean, in the broadest sense of the words, I think that yes, you know, putting sustainability front forward and having people visit and really steward ecologically sensitive areas is of course important. But that vitality, you know, that piece of it in terms of who operates that ecotourism resort, who owns the fishing ships, you know, who's renting you the scuba equipment. Again, I think people and place is key. yes to ecotourism, but be wary of some of the green washing and the green kind of just flagrant marketing that's out there, because that's also happening, because people in the industry, in the conventional travel industry, they know that more of us are purchasing our tickets and our packages with our values. So I think it's really important, again, to balance, to bring up that people and place, to look at that sacred connection that you were mentioning around, you know, the earth or the ocean with the people and the culture. And so sustainability and their best practices are ones that both really honor and minimize the ecological impact of the visitor, while also enhancing, to some degree, the benefits to the local economy. But I will say, we also have to really watch out on what the numbers are, what the density is, how many people can really be in and out of the Galapagos. You know, being from Hawaii, I've seen what's happened in Mai Bay and Kaneohe Bay and Kailua and the Hananua Bay. And it's not like it was in the, I'm going to age myself here, when the 60s, like when I was a kid or in the early 70s. And so I do think, you know, the amount of visitors and things like that that are going in and out of the area does need to be really carefully managed. And that does take really progressive legislation from the top down. And it takes pressure on many travelers to actually support those higher fees that are influenced and managed by the ministries of tourism to steward their World Heritage sites, if it's biological, or Angkor Wat, these other places in Machu Picchu, that you just can't have, you know, 20,000 people trapping through there every day. You do have to limit the amount of people. So, yes, overall with a big smile, and but with caution and with balance. Thank you.
Final question.
Yes, my name is Jeff Potter, and in regard to your evaluations, Are you able to quantify CO2 levels now and in the future in regard to percentages, things like that?
We don't do the actual. We don't stand out there with a piece of litmus paper ourselves. There are many many indices available for all the different parameters we look at. One of our main researchers, Christy Hoover, is here, and during the reception, you can ask about some of the many sources we go to. From, you know, in terms of environmentally, there's the United Nations and various other, you know, global organizations have very strict scientific, you know, ratings that they give to each country based on CO2 emissions, based on greenhouse gases of all kinds, based on, you know, clean energy, every kind of parameter. We do offer that methodology to people who ask, and if you're interested, we can provide that for you. But it gets a little technical for the purposes of this evening. So,
thank you.
Sure. So that's the end of the questions, and I think that's the end of the program. I know the Commonwealth Club wraps it up in their own particular way, but I just want to take the opportunity to just invite you all to. We have a wonderful reception with some really nice food and drink that was donated by some wonderful people, including my good friend. Christine McCall, who donated some cases of very nice red wine. And I want to thank you all again for coming. Hope you enjoy schmoozing in the reception. And it's been really great to present you with these findings and just get out there.
Vote with your wings.
So our thanks to Jeff Greenwald, travel journalist and executive director of Ethical Traveler, and to Malia Everett, founder of Altruvistas. And thank you to our audience here and those listening online. I'm Christina Namath, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California is adjourned.